for public broadcasting.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up today, we're going to open up the phone lines later on. We'll also hear what Al Franken said on the floor of the Senate as he was giving his farewell speech from the U.S. Senate last night. And we'll talk about movies, maybe, too. First, three listener comments about yesterday's program. Yesterday, we were talking about the tax bill that was passed in Washington and soon to be signed, presumably, by President Trump. Here's what three listeners had to say.
Great show. I didn't hear it brought up that in today's paper, the Associated Press did a nice story about the tax rate we just got. But one of the lines in there that the president was expected to sign the bill at a later date for technical reasons. In fact, the signing may be postponed until the start of the new calendar year in order to delay $120 billion in automatic tax cuts, such as to Medicare, and spare Republicans from having to explain them in an election year. So he's not going to sign the bill until the first of the year, so those cuts don't take place, and we don't have to go beat up the Republicans over it. But the whole thing is just a shame.
Hi, Rob. This is Mike in Tampa regarding your show on Radioactivity today regarding the tax code. Some folks could argue back and forth about the corporate tax cuts and whether that's warranted or not. Maybe it's overkill. But two very simple things that I think are inexcusable is the reduction of the top income tax rate from 39.6 to 37, and also increasing the limit at which the estate tax kicks in. It would be nice if you could find some numbers, if somebody's calculated, how much do those two steps alone increase the deficit? Because it's pretty clear they were unnecessary. But if we could find out how much those increase the deficit, that would be handy. Thank you very much.
Well, there were two listener comments about yesterday's program. You're listening to Radioactivity on WMNF in Tampa. I'm Rob Lori. And right now we're going to listen to what Al Franken, the Democratic senator from Minnesota, who resigned from office earlier this month amid sexual misconduct allegations. We're going to listen to what he said in his final speech on the Senate floor last night. And we're going to join it where he's talking about his mentor and friend, the late Senator Paul Wellstone. So let's listen to what Al Franken, who is resigning from the U.S. Senate, said yesterday, and then we'll open up the phone lines at 813-239-9663.
Years, the seat I currently occupy is held by Paul Wellstone. As I've said before, Paul was a tireless, passionate champion for working families, in Minnesota and across the nation. He fought for veterans, for farmers, and for those who simply needed a voice. Paul was my friend, and Paul had a saying that I think perfectly represents the values and the principles for which he fought. He used to say, "We all do better when we all do better." That was Paul's creed. What Paul meant by that is that the whole country, the working poor, the middle class, and the well-off, the whole country does better when each and every one of us is able to contribute to and participate fairly in our economy and in our democracy. I think Paul was right, but not everybody does. Some people's values are different. Some people believe that those at the top are there for a reason, and that they shouldn't have to concern themselves with what's going on in the lives of people who haven't been so lucky or even so accomplished. Some people believe, honestly, legitimately believe, that not everyone deserves to have the same standing in this country. They believe that your standing as a citizen should depend in part on where you were born, or what you believe, or who you love, or what you do for a living. Some people believe that at some fundamental level, we are all in this on our own. I don't agree with any of those values, but I respect that some people hold them, and that's why arguments matter. When we argue, whether it's across the fence with your neighbor or on a cable news show or here on the floor in the Senate, it can help us sharpen our ability to articulate what we want and challenge us to examine our own views with a more critical eye and help highlight the choice for the American people, because, after all, in a democracy, the people get to choose. As I prepare to leave the Senate, Mr. President, I've been thinking a lot about my values and Paul's values, the values we share with many of my colleagues here in the Senate, and many of the progressive activists that I've met and worked alongside of in Minnesota and around the country. And that's because, regrettably, the policies pursued by the Trump administration and congressional Republicans today could not stand in starker contrast to the principles Paul championed and the values that I have fought for during my time in the Senate. Mr. President, the values being advanced by the President and his allies in Congress simply don't represent my belief that our economy, our democracy, and our country works best when they work for everyone. Indeed, the values propelling the Republican agenda today are about consolidating political and economic power in the hands of corporations and the very wealthy. Just take the tax bill that Congress passed this week. At virtually each and every step of the process, Republicans drafting this bill chose to embrace the failed trickle-down policies of the past, crafting an enormous giveaway that benefits their corporate campaign backers and wealthy donors. For instance, according to the Nonpartisan Tax Policy Center, by 2027, 83% of the benefits in the Republican tax bill will accrue to the top 1% of income earners. That's people who make more than $912,000 a year. 83% of the benefits go to the top 1%. Do we really need any other data point? Well, here's one. At the same time, the Republican tax bill would increase taxes on 35 million low- and middle-income families. During his inaugural address, President Trump vowed that, quote, "the forgotten men and women of our country will be forgotten no longer." But the Republican tax bill represents a slap in the face to those forgotten men and women. I guess the president forgot about them. Make no mistake, the Senate-passed version of the Republican tax bill was deeply flawed, but when Republicans later attempted to reconcile differences between the House and Senate bills, a process that took place behind closed doors, even more favors were doled out to Republican donors and to special interests. New rules were created to give real estate developers, like President Trump and his son-in-law, the ability to pay less tax on pass-through income. The top individual rate, which applies to millionaires and billionaires, was cut to 37%, a rate lower than either the House or Senate versions of the bill. And provisions in the original bills that were designed to stop foreign corporations from avoiding taxes by shifting their profits overseas, a practice known as earnings stripping, were dropped altogether. Mr. President, the problem in this country is not that the wealthy aren't doing well enough. After all, the top 1% of the country's population controls nearly 40% of its wealth. The problem is that too many working families have been left out of the economic growth that the top 1% have enjoyed in recent years. But rather than use the tax reform bill as an opportunity to help those working families, Republicans have instead decided to shower corporations and wealthy donors with tax breaks and special favors. The tax bill didn't just come out of the blue. Quite the contrary, Mr. President. The tax bill comes on the heels of countless Republican attempts to shred policies that offer protection to working families and the environment. But the corporations and wealthy donors who support my Republican colleagues believe that these policies stand in the way of their profits. Take health care, for example. Despite President Trump's campaign promise that, quote, "we're going to have insurance for everybody," unquote, when his administration attempted to deliver on that promise, House Republicans devised and passed a bill that would have resulted in 23 million fewer people having health insurance, including 14 million people who rely on Medicaid. Facing unprecedented public outcry, Republican senators eventually proposed a narrower bill, one that didn't repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act outright, but instead undermined some of its most foundational provisions. But this narrower Senate bill still would have left 16 million more Americans uninsured, all while spiking premiums by 20%, according to CBO. The American people continued to fight, demanding that the Senate kill the bill, and thanks to the incredibly hard work of organizers, activists, including the American Medical Association, by the way, and everyday Americans, that's exactly what happened. The Republican attempts to repeal the ACA failed, but it seems that my Republican colleagues have not learned their lesson, finding themselves unable to sustain an open assault on the Affordable Care Act. They instead included a measure in the tax bill that will repeal an essential component of that law, the individual mandate. As a result, 13 million fewer Americans will have health insurance in the years to come. But that doesn't matter to President Trump and his allies, who claim that they need to repeal the central pillar of Obamacare in order to pay for the massive tax cuts that their wealthy donors demand. Those same wealthy donors also demand that Republicans turn a blind eye to climate change, an existential threat to humanity. Climate change is not just an environmental problem. Climate change stands to affect virtually every aspect of our lives, posing a grave threat to public health, national security, our country's infrastructure, and our economy. Circumstances require that we take immediate action in order to protect the welfare of future generations. But almost every Republican in Congress refused to take the issue of climate change seriously. They continue to deny the underlying evidence and science behind it, even as Americans suffer the devastating consequences of their denial. This year alone, hurricanes raged Texas, Florida, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands, and wildfires raged across the West, most recently in Los Angeles. We know that climate change makes these extreme weather events worse. And this is just the beginning. What we are witnessing is the beginning of a new normal that this country simply cannot endure. But it doesn't have to be this way. It is possible to address climate change while at the same time growing our economy and creating jobs. During the Obama administration, the federal government increased research and development investments in clean energy technology, both through tax credits designed to incentivize investment, through the energy title that I was proud to help write in the Farm Bill, which allowed people in rural America to participate in the clean energy revolution. And those investments paid off. Since 2009, the cost of wind power has decreased by 66%, and the cost of solar power has dropped by 85%. But we need to do more. I championed an energy efficiency standard that would require utilities to become more efficient. I led legislation to encourage energy storage, a game changer that allows wind and solar to be used when the wind isn't blowing and the sun isn't shining. And I pushed to deploy distributed energy that makes our grid more resilient and reliable. But rather than join me and my Democratic colleagues in confronting the challenge of climate change by driving innovation, Republicans have ordered a retreat at the behest of the fossil fuel industry and other corporate interests. Republicans have put forward nominees for key environmental posts who cut their teeth defending corporate polluters, not enforcing the laws that keep our air and water clean. And they have pushed an agenda that guts funding for science and innovation.
You're listening to a speech by Senator Al Franken from last night on the Senate floor in Washington, D.C., and this is WMNF.
Mr. President, the Republican strategy of denial and obfuscation isn't just an affront to good government, it's an affront to common sense. But Mr. President, the Trump administration and its allies in Congress have never let science or common sense stand in the way of ideology. Time and time again, they have acted to roll back evidence-based common sense protections put in place to improve the lives of minority or marginalized communities, including women and LGBT people. For example, in October, the Trump administration announced a new rule that guts a provision in the Affordable Care Act that required health insurance plans to cover birth control free of charge, a policy that has benefited more than 62 million American women. Mr. President, the ability to access affordable reproductive health care has a powerful effect on the choices that women and families make every day. Choices about whether to finish college, buy a home, or start a business. Ensuring that women have access to contraception is vital to the economic security of our families, and that's why I filed a brief in support of the ACA's contraceptive coverage requirement when it was challenged before the Supreme Court. But despite the millions of women who have benefited from the policy, and despite the science demonstrating that restricting access to contraception has negative health consequences, the Trump administration has eviscerated the policy. In February, the Trump administration rescinded Obama-era guidelines and instructed schools on how to protect transgender students under a federal law called Title IX. Mr. President, LGBT students deserve to learn in an environment free from discrimination, and they deserve to be treated with dignity and respect. But far too often, LGBT kids, particularly transgender kids, experience bullying and harassment. When that happens, those students are deprived of an equal education. That's why I led the Senate in calling on the Obama administration to issue those guidelines back in 2015. Nonetheless, the Trump administration decided to scrap that guidance, a callous and mean-spirited decision that sent a terrible message to LGBT children and their parents, and which took away a tool designed to protect our children. It is our responsibility, not just as senators, but as adults, to protect our children, not turn a blind eye when they face prejudice and cruelty. Mr. President, nothing that Republicans have done is more galling, nothing poses a greater threat to the fabric of our democracy than their deliberate and sustained attack on the right to vote. Let's start with the Supreme Court's disastrous 2013 decision in Shelby County versus Holder, a 5-4 decision in which the court's conservative justices effectively gutted the Voting Rights Act and eliminated a vital check on states with a history of discrimination at the polls. After that decision, states swiftly began to enact harsh restrictions on the right to vote, and in many cases, citing the myth of so-called voter fraud as justification. Now take North Carolina, for example. Just a few months after Shelby County, the state enacted one of the nation's strictest voter ID laws. Without any evidence, the state described the new restrictions as necessary to prevent fraud. And without the protections of the Voting Rights Act, those changes went into effect, keeping poor and minority voters from casting a ballot. When North Carolina's restrictions were eventually challenged in court, the Fourth Circuit found that the primary purpose of the restrictions wasn't to fight fraud, but to make it harder for black people to vote. The court found that, quote, the new provisions target African Americans with almost surgical precision, unquote. Now, Mr. President, the fact that North Carolina's restrictions stand as a blatant example of race discrimination is undeniable. But the strategy behind adopting such harsh restrictions is even more insidious. The strategy here is designed to ensure that voters who don't agree with their candidates or their policies aren't able to vote against them. Mr. President, Paul Wellstone's words are more important today than ever before. We all do better when we all do better. I believe that to my core. Mr. President, the policies pursued by President Trump and his allies are not about lifting people out of poverty or about the politically powerless giving them a louder voice in our democracy. These policies are intended to line the pockets of wealthy donors and protect the power of those who already wield outsized influence in our democracy. That is a far cry from Paul's creed. And when I think about what's gone wrong here, when I reflect on how this country is straying so far from the values that I believe a majority of Americans share, I have to say I think there's something wrong with the way that we are arguing. And it started long before 2016. Lurking behind each of those issues isn't just a difference of opinion or a difference of values. There's something far worse, a lie. Take, for example, the Trump administration's efforts to suppress votes. Shortly after winning the presidential election, then-President-elect Trump was confronted with the unpleasant fact that he lost the popular vote. He tweeted, quote, "In addition to winning the Electoral College in a landslide, I won the popular vote if you deduct the millions of people who voted illegally." Now, let's be clear. President Trump lost the popular vote by more than 2.8 million votes. So what he claimed in that tweet is that nearly 3 million fraudulent votes were cast. In fact, he later claimed that between 3 and 5 million illegal votes caused him to lose the popular vote, citing no evidence. Mr. President, 138 million votes were cast in the 2016 presidential election. State election and law enforcement officials found virtually no credible evidence of fraud, and no states, not one state, reported any indications of widespread fraud. None. But that didn't stop the Trump administration from quickly turning the president's tweets into policy. The White House created a new commission to investigate the president's wild and unsubstantiated claim, a commission led by Kansas Secretary of State Kris Kobach, a right-wing extremist who has made a career out of trafficking in the voter fraud myth and who was fined for repeatedly lying to a federal court in voter ID litigation. When Kobach was asked whether he believed the president's claim that millions of people voted illegally, he said, and I quote, "We may never know the answer to that question." Really? Mr. President, this episode could almost be considered funny if the ramifications weren't so deadly serious. Kobach's Voter Fraud Commission requested sensitive information about voters, including the names, dates of birth, party registration, and voting history from all 50 states. This is information that could lay the groundwork for disenfranchising scores of millions of eligible voters, which is why more than 40 states refused to comply with that request. At the same time, the Trump Sessions Justice Department quickly dropped legal challenges to discriminatory voting practices in the states, further signaling that protecting the right to vote will no longer be a priority of the Justice Department. And it's all based on a lie, and not a lie President Trump came up with. Right-wing conservatives have been raising a false alarm about so-called voter fraud for years, despite the fact that no credible evidence has ever been produced demonstrating that it is a real problem. Or take the Trump administration's attacks on LGBT rights. Again and again, lurking behind these policies are lies, lies that advocates of LGBT rights want to trample on people's religious freedom, the lie that families led by a gay or lesbian couple don't provide a safe environment for children, The lie that allowing transgender people to use the appropriate bathroom opens the door to sexual assault. President Trump didn't invent these lies, but he and his administration proudly repeat them. Or take the attacks on science, especially climate science. We now have enough evidence to conclude that climate change is real, and it's man-made, and it is a threat to our nation's security, and an existential threat to the planet. Defense Secretary Mattis knows this. And yet for years, so-called scientists funded by industry have been hard at work casting doubt on the well-established scientific consensus. Heck, a recent Washington Post report revealed that the Trump administration officials have prohibited the Centers for Disease Control, our nation's premier health and research institution, from using the terms evidence-based and science-based in budget planning documents. President Trump didn't launch the war on science, but now he's leading the charge.
You're listening to a speech from last night. It's Minnesota Senator Al Franken saying goodbye to the U.S. Senate, the seat that he's giving up in just a few days, resigning because of sexual misconduct allegations. We're going to hear more of the speech, and if you want to comment about it, you can email us at dj@wmnf.org. This is 88.5 FM.
Or take health care. President Trump promised that everyone would have insurance. But analysis by the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office revealed that under House Republican health care bill, under their bill, 23 million fewer people would have health insurance than are currently covered today. 23 million people. And to add insult to injury, the House bill would have hit the most vulnerable among us and would hit them the hardest. According to CBO, 14 million of the 23 million people who would have lost coverage under the House Republicans' plan were Medicaid beneficiaries. That's right. Despite candidates' assurances that, quote, everybody's going to be taken care of much better than they're taken care of now, unquote, the Republican bill would have cut funding to Medicaid, a vital safety net program that ensures that our seniors, people with disabilities, pregnant women, and families with children have access to the health care that they need. On top of that, the Republican plan would have driven up the cost of premiums, with older and sicker people experiencing the steepest increases. Indeed, the health care debate has long been predicated on lies, a lie that, quote, well over 90% of what Planned Parenthood does is provide abortion services. The lie that women only rely on birth control because they are sexually promiscuous. The lie that the Affordable Care Act is collapsing under its own weight, when in fact the Trump administration and Republicans here in Congress have been doing everything they can do to sabotage it. And then there's the tax debate. Over the last year, Republicans have repeatedly claimed that they would advance policies designed to benefit middle-class families, not the wealthy. President Trump pledged not to forget the, quote, unforgotten men and women of our country. Steve Mnuchin, the Secretary of Treasury, promised that the Republican tax plan would help the middle class. He vowed that any tax cuts for upper-income earners would be offset by getting rid of deductions that benefit the wealthy. That's what he said. Let me quote Secretary Mnuchin. He said, quote, there will be no absolute tax cut for the upper class. But again, Madam President, 83% of the benefits in the Republican tax bill go to the richest 1%. What he said just isn't true. Even just the other day, the White House press secretary claimed that President Trump himself will pay more because of this bill. We don't know for sure exactly what its effect will be on his personal finances because the White House has refused to release his tax returns, claiming in another lie that he can't release them because they're under audit. You can release tax returns while you're under audit. What we do know, Mr. President, is that tax breaks in the Republican bill for real estate developers like President Trump and his family will save him millions upon millions of dollars. I could go on and on. You know, before I came to the Senate, I was known as something of an obsessive on the subject of honesty in public discourse. But as I leave the Senate, I feel, I have to admit that it feels like we're losing the war for truth. And maybe it's already lost. And if that's the case, if that's what happens, then we have lost the ability to have the kinds of argument that help build consensus. And I see Lamar Alexander here. We have done that in the Health Committee. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, when we've done that. Or at least help the American people make informed choices about the issues that affect their lives. So what is to be done? Who will stand up and fight for a more honest debate? To insist that even though we have a different set of opinions, we cannot honorably advance our competing agendas unless we use the same set of facts. Well, I hope that my colleagues on both sides of the aisle will stand up for truth. The thing is, I have spent enough time with my Republican friends over the last 8.5 years to know that you are motivated by values just like Democrats. I just hope that you will fight for those values forthrightly. But at the end of the day, it's going to be up to the American people, just like it's always been. We will always have the democracy we deserve, if not the government we want. It's going to take ordinary Americans deciding to become more informed consumers of political news and opinion, and deciding that they're willing to be part of the argument themselves instead of simply tuning out all of the noise. And if they do, I know that we will get this country back on track. In October, 15 years after we lost Paul, I took to the Senate floor to remember him and to celebrate his life. Paul understood better than anyone I know the meaning and the power of politics. And I think he would have a lot to say about where we find ourselves today. Paul said, quote, "Politics is not about power. Politics is not about money. Politics is not about winning for the sake of winning. Politics is about the improvement of people's lives." Even in the face of everything that is happening today, I still believe in Paul's words. Politics is about the improvement of people's lives. I know those words to be true because I know that the American people still believe in justice and equality and opportunity. And I see evidence of that every day. I saw it in January. More than 4 million people across the United States joined the Women's March, standing in solidarity with their mothers and sisters and daughters and wives. I saw it later that same month after President Trump issued an executive order seeking to ban travelers from Muslim-majority countries from entering our country, when hundreds of lawyers responded to a call to help and rush to airports offering their services and support to affected families. I saw it in May when a transgender boy in Wisconsin who was discriminated against by his school had the courage to take them to court, and he won. I saw it in September when tens of thousands of Americans mobilized in opposition to attempts to repeal the Affordable Care Act and succeeded in killing the bill. And I saw it at the ballot box, when voters in Virginia and Alabama resisted the temptation to give in to anger and cynicism and instead exercise their right to vote. Politics is about the improvement of people's lives. The American people know that to be true, and they fill me with hope for our future. Thank you, Madam President.
Well, that was the last speech to be given by Al Franken on the floor of the U.S. Senate. He made it last night. He's stepping down in a few days as the senator from Minnesota, talking about one of his political mentors there, Paul Wellstone, at the very beginning and very end of his speech. What do you think? 813 813- 239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. I want to talk about this, and then since we're almost at the Christmas break, and a lot of people will not be working on Monday, some people will be sitting home over the weekend consuming vast amounts of television and maybe going to the movies, too, which is one of my favorite things to do during the holiday season. Although this weekend it's going to be rather warm. I think on Christmas Day it's going to be 73 outside. So it's not going to feel much like Christmas. Overnight lows will be in the 50s and 60s. So it is really not. It's just, you know, it's not really great, a great time to cuddle up on your couch under a blanket and watch lots of television or go to the movies. I think it's a great time to be outside. But this is a question I had is, what's your favorite movie to watch this time of year? There was a survey in the Tampa Bay Times this morning. Writer Christopher Spada interviewed a bunch of Santa Clauses around the country and found out their top favorite Christmas movies. I think this is list closely aligns with the list that many people would come up with. Number one, Miracle on 34th Street. Number two, It's a Wonderful Life. The Santa Claus is on there. A Christmas Story is there. Then number five, The Polar Express. Number six, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Charlie Brown's Christmas. I guess that's the TV show that shows every year. Then Elf, Die Hard, and Love Actually. All those are pretty great films, aren't they? So what's your favorite movie to watch this time of year? 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Number two movie on that list was It's a Wonderful Life, and it's going to show again this Sunday night on TV. As you know, as if you've been a longtime listener to MNF, we've done a couple of shows about this, that the FBI investigated whether or not It's a Wonderful Life is a subversive movie. And if you watch it from the lens of today, I think it is pretty subversive. I think it does take a stand on behalf of the little people and the average worker and against the big banking interests. As you know, I mean, there was an FBI investigation into it. There's scholars who've written articles about it that the FBI investigated. It's a Wonderful Life. And Jimmy Kimmel did a takeoff on It's a Wonderful Life. He wondered aloud, what would happen if Fox News, and Dan just said The Bishop's Wife is a good Christmastime movie. That is a great film. Jimmy Kimmel wondered, what would happen if Fox News had directed It's a Wonderful Life? And let's listen to Jimmy Kimmel's take on that, the Fox News version of It's a Wonderful Life.
This Christmas, rediscover the heartwarming story of the sleepy, economically backwards town of Bedford Falls.
Nobody ever changes here, you know that.
And it's one extraordinary citizen, Henry Potter.
I may lose a fortune, but I am willing to guarantee your people too.
This capitalist had a dream to transform Bedford Falls into a modern entertainment and business mecca, creating hundreds of new jobs. But one man would stand in his way.
You remember me? George Bailey.
Draft dodger George Bailey and his socialist building and loan.
We've got to have faith in each other.
Will Henry Potter's common sense reforms win the day?
What does that get us? A discontented, lazy rabble instead of a thrifty working class?
Or will George Bailey succeed with his scheme to redistribute wealth?
They had to wait and save their money before they even thought of a decent home? Wait for what?
How far will Bailey go to destroy free markets and economic progress? How low will he sink?
Where's that money, you silly, stupid old fool?
This Christmas, enjoy a classic as it was meant to be understood. Fox News presents Mr. Potter and the Commies of Bedford Falls.
That is so brilliant, and it makes me want to watch It's a Wonderful Life every time I hear that. So It's a Wonderful Life on TV, the subversive movie It's a Wonderful Life on Sunday night, and where the real stars are not the big bankers, but the average people of Bedford Falls. Well, let's open up the phone lines and take your phone calls. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. Two items on the table here, Al Franken's farewell speech and what movie do you like to curl up and watch this time of year? And have you seen a good movie in the theaters? Jack writes this, it's obvious we're living in a corrupt society. By their own admission, the Republicans have stated that our downer contributors will be happy now. I guess he means donor contributors will be happy now. They got what they paid for, lowering their obligations to live in a democratic society. Barry writes this, Minnesota is demographically similar to Michigan and Wisconsin. Clinton won there just barely. Without a strong Democratic incumbent for running for Senate in Minnesota, I predict the next senator elected will be a Republican. If we are lucky, it will be Arnie Carlson or Tim Pawlenty and not Michelle Bachmann. Thanks, Senate Dems. So Barry Schilinski, I think, suggesting that Al Franken should not have resigned. Let's go to Mary, who's in Tampa. Hi, Mary. What would you like to say?
Hi, Rob. Thank you so much for playing the Al Franken speech. It was on my list of things to do to get around to listening to that, but, you know, with the busyness of the holidays, I'm not sure if I would have made it. And I really, really appreciate it. It was wonderful. I have texted a number of friends to let them know that they need to listen to it, and I want to nominate Al Franken for president.
How about that? How about that? Do you think he could make a comeback? Do you think that?
I think so. Yeah. I think so. You know, the Republicans will probably try to, you know, talk about this sexual harassment stuff, but then all we have to say is, but look at who you put in office, you know? So they won't have anything to say about Al on that manner. So I think Al might have a chance for it. I hope he's willing to run.
All right, Mary, thanks a lot. Thanks for starting the conversation.
All right.
All right.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. 813-239-9663. Shannon writes her favorite movie this time of year, Home Alone. I love the soundtrack to Home Alone. And how did those bad guys survive all that brutality in the first Home Alone? Bill writes, Bad Santa is a good movie. Okay. And thanks, Bill. And then here's somebody anonymous likes The Manchurian Candidate, which is a great film, especially the first one. The second one wasn't too bad either. The remake, and then All the President's Men. I can't wait to see The Post, which is the movie about the Pentagon Papers that's coming out in just a few days. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. Let's go to Gary in Dunedin. Gary, you're on. What would you like to say?
Well, first of all, Rob, I want to thank you for what you've done this year. I'm a huge consumer of media news, and I can say objectively that your show, Mark Biro's show, and Democracy Now! Are the best information sources that are available electronically in America and in print. So thank you for that this year. Al Franken's speech is heartbreakingly accurate. He should not have resigned. And, you know, I think Paul Wellstone was actually killed, you know, deliberately. But finally, the state of America today, it's come to a point, I believe, where nonviolent direct action, civil disobedience, as was seen in the 60s and the early 70s to stop the war and stop Nixon, are the only real things that are going to stop the coup and the takeover of America by the Trump cult and the corporate oligarchs. I hope everyone has a great Christmas, but let's get serious and realize we're losing this country. We're losing the land, the air, the water, the innocent, sweet animals, the trees. We're losing our democracy. We're losing our right to vote. We're losing our courts. And voting alone and holding up signs isn't going to stop the brutal people like Donald Trump. Have a great Christmas.
All right, Gary. Thanks a lot. Well, if you want to agree or disagree with anything you've heard here, call us up at 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. And let's go to Daryl in Tampa. Hi, Daryl, you're on. What would you like to say?
Well, I guess on a lighter note, I would say my favorite film would be like a Charlie Brown Christmas.
Yeah. Do you watch it every year when it comes on TV?
Hmm?
Do you watch it every year?
When it comes on TV. And then A Wonderful Life. But on a serious note, I would just like to pair it with the gentleman who was just on the phone. Just what he had to say. I don't think that Al Franken should not have resigned. And by me saying that does not mean that I take lightly the issue of sexual harassment. the real sick thing about what just happened to Mr. Franken is that people can lay out allegations against people, but you don't. It's like you don't have the right to face your accusers anymore, and you don't get your day in court or face the committee that's set up to investigate allegations that are against you. And if we're living in a society like that's like that now, this country is done for. That's wrong. That means anybody could. Let's say somebody laid out an allegation against Rob Lori. I would fight vehemently, if that's the right word, that you should be able to face your accusers and that you should have your day in court. And if they are proven wrong, they should be held liable for doing that because they slandered you. And that's the nation that we're faced with right now. And I think that's wrong. I think that's very wrong. And to pair it with the gentleman just said before, holding up signs and putting flowers in your head. Yeah, I'm saying it just like that. And marches and protests have all their place. But you need to get your behind in a voting booth, and you need to vote your best interest.
All right. Yeah.
You do.
Yeah, lots at stake. Say. You're right. A lot is at stake. Daryl, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Happy holidays. 813-239-9663. Now, Joe writes, surprised no one mentioned The Last Waltz is a good film to watch this time of year. That is a great film. All right. And Terry says the new Woody Allen film, Wonder Wheel, in the theaters, Happy Christmas. That didn't get very good reviews, I saw. Maybe I'll go try to see that Woody Allen movie, but I'm waiting for some critic to say it's good. And then Brad writes, The Hateful Eight is a good film. I think that's a Quentin Tarantino film. I don't think I've seen that. James writes this about Al Franken. We lost a good man and a statesman, not just a senator. I was looking to support him in 2020 for president. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. Let's go to Linda, who's in Spring Hill. Hi, Linda. How are you?
Hi there. I just wanted to nominate It Happened on Fifth Avenue. It's an old film, but I love it.
And who do you remember who's in that? Is that a Christmas film or is that
it's kind of Christmassy.
Okay.
It doesn't say anything specifically about Christmas.
Yeah.
And I have to get off the phone. I'm driving.
Okay, Linda, thank you so much. I'm going to have to look up that film. That's one I've heard about, but I can't remember who's in it. It seems to me that was a film that came out in the 50s, if I'm right. But Linda, thanks for the suggestion. And let's go to Ian in Sarasota. Hi, Ian. You're on. What would you like to say?
Hello.
Hi, you're on.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about Al Franken. I would pardon him for his behavior and everything, but I really trust in him, and I wanted him to be the next president of America. He's a great man, and I think he's the second after the John Kennedy, and I'd like to all American women to stand up and speak up, and we want him back, and because he's going to be our great leader and he's going to be a good man who really cares about this country and every one of us.
All right.
That's what I want to say.
Ian, thanks a lot. Thank you. A lot of support here for Al Franken. 813-239-9663. Joe also added he likes A Hard Day's Night, which I think is one of the great, most innovative movies of all time, the first Beatles movie. David likes holiday movies. The Gremlins is great and often overlooked. So that's David and Brandon, who says we should check out Gremlins. I've never seen Gremlins. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Danny in Tampa. Hi, Danny. You're on. What would you like to say?
First of all, Rob, happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Thank you. Yes, I agree with the last foot callers. I think Al Franken will hopefully make a comeback, and hopefully that the House and the Senate will go ahead around the midterms, and we'll go to the Democrats, and we can stop the Donald Trump agenda, and hopefully impeach Donald Trump because he is a obstacle to our freedom, and actually a threat to our freedom. About movies, I'm not a very big Christmas movie person, but there would be a It's a Wonderful Life, obviously, would be my favorite. I have non-Christmas movies that I would like The Graduate, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Nevada Smith with Steve McQueen, and I'm definitely wanting to see The Post.
Yeah, I want to see that, too.
That's
all right.
That's going to be terrific.
All right, Danny.
Great holiday.
All right, you too.
Thank you.
All right, enjoy it with that great family of yours. David writes this: I'm really pleased to see that The Florida Project is on many film critics' best of 2017 movies. I encourage your listeners to go see it. It's a heartbreaking movie. Bring the Kleenex. Yeah, I wanted to see that. I was looking it up last night, trying to go see it last night, and it's nowhere in Tampa. I guess it's in Sarasota, but I didn't want to drive that far last night. But David, thanks for the suggestion. And let's go back to the phones. You're listening to Radioactivity on WMNF in Tampa. Remember that Daniel Ruth is coming up in the next hour, and I know Dan is a big film buff. He knows much more about films than I do, having been a film critic. So stick around, listen to him. I suspect he may mention a film or two. Thanks to Patty Perkey, and thanks to Frank Knox, both working behind the scenes to make this show possible. And let's go to Gina in Tampa. Hi, Gina. You're on. What would you like to say?
Hi. Happy holidays, first of all. And I don't have any films to recommend, but I'd like to tell you something that just happened to me just this morning. I had to cancel a medical procedure outpatient, because I don't have the money for the outpatient clinic. The fee was twice, out of pocket was twice what I had expected it to be. And they're charging by the procedure, not by the duration, which would have been, you know, less money and therefore more affordable. And then to make it worse, the doctor got angry with me, which surprised me. I mean, what would it, you know, matter to him if you have to, you know, cancel? And he's twisting my arm this morning, telling me that I'm going against his medical advice. But
you couldn't afford it. You're going against it. His advice. You couldn't afford it.
What would you have me do if I can't, you know, if I can't afford the surgery? And the procedure is only a half an hour. It's on the eye, and believe me, I need it. I have to tape my eyes at night, and I suffer from, you know, really bad dry eye, and corneal abrasions. And he's right; I need it. But you know, we live in a country where that doesn't matter. They want their money, and they're charging it in such a way that the type of fee structure that they're using is not favorable to the consumer. It's to gouge, you know, more for them. They're charging as though they're doing the surgery, as opposed to the fact that I'm only going to be there for an hour at most.
Well, Gene, I hope
we need people like Al Franken, and it's such a shame that he's at this.
Well, it sounds like you need some help right now. I wonder if there's some place that you could go to get the money that you could pay as for the procedure, because that sounds like something you need to do. Yeah, I don't know.
This is the country we live in right now, and I hope that this will change for us in the future. I mean, I hope that. This bill that was paid and passed, the tax bill, I hope that wakes up a lot of people who need to start getting involved, who haven't been, to affect a true change in this country.
All right, Gina, thanks a lot. Happy holidays. I hope things turn out well for you. Boy, we can't get to Levi and Lynn and Z and Robin and all the people who are online. And Robert sent an email in. But stick around. Call in on Daniel Ruth's show. He's coming up next. Thanks a lot. Have a great Christmas, if you celebrate Christmas, and have a great holiday. This is 88.5 FM WMNF in Tampa. I'm Rob Lori. Stay tuned for the news. Perfect life.